I screwed up, Pierre, years and years ago. This is my fault.
Welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt. Thanks for joining me here today for episode number 457. You just heard a very brief little snippet from an audiobook that was created by my two guests today, author Christina Holbrook and producer Walker Vreeland. And we're going to be talking all about how the three of us came together to create the novel and audiobook, All the Flowers of the Mountain, even while Christina and Walker have been dealing with serious life-limiting illness. And it's a beautiful story, full of mystery, miracles, and love, and I think you'll really enjoy our conversation, so stay tuned for that. First, a couple of announcements. I want to let you know once again that our Foundations of Compassionate Communities course is now up and running. It's a free course that was created by our think tank, me along with Elizabeth Johnson, Aaron Collins, and Quinn Galloway Salazar. And so this is a brief online course you can take to dive in a little bit deeper to the model that we're using for compassionate communities. At the end of that course, you'll be invited to sign up for our question and answer session, kind of a town hall session where you can come on and get more information and let us know what you're trying to do in your community. That meeting will take place June 5th, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern online, and be a live town hall, as I said. So again, if you sign up for the Compassionate Communities Foundations course, you'll be invited to attend the town hall. At the end of that course, go to compassionatecommunities.us to learn more about it. And I will have a link in the show notes for this episode at eolupodcast.com. If you're interested at all in compassionate communities or making changes in the community where you live, I hope you'll take this brief course and then join us on June 5th for the town hall. Next, I want to thank my latest supporter on Patreon, Chris Kington Barker. Wow, Chris, thank you. It's so great to see your name. We haven't connected for a long time, but I just wanted to thank you for becoming a member of my Patreon community. And if you're interested, you can go to patreon.com/EOLU, join the community, and get some bonuses for signing up there. And then finally, a little bit more personal announcement that affects this podcast. For health reasons, I've made the decision going forward from here on out to change the schedule for the podcast. And so I will be airing episodes a little less frequently. I may be subbing in some old episodes every now and then. There may be weeks with no episode. And let's suffice it to say, I am following my heart on this one. And if you want to know more about what's going on with me personally, you can go to What Really Matters podcast, and I share more personal information on that podcast than I do here. So if it's of any interest to you, you can go to that podcast and listen to the latest episode, and I go into a little more detail there. But I just wanted to prepare you, if you're a regular listener, that there may not be an episode every single Monday, even though I've been promising that and delivering on that promise for several years now. I need to just back off a little bit and give myself a little bit more rest and recovery time. So be prepared for some interruptions and some weeks when there's no podcast. And I'm tempted to apologize for that, but then I realize we should never apologize for taking care of ourselves. That should be the basis of how we do all of our work, that we care for our own selves with love and compassion first. So that's what I'm trying to do. So again, there'll be some interruptions. There'll be weeks without a podcast, but I hope you still find it valuable and will still be my listener and follow along. So we will move on now with today's conversation with Christina Holbrook and Walker Vreeland. This is a really special one for me, and I hope you enjoy it as well. I'll be back afterwards with a few takeaways and to say goodbye. And I will also play the rest of that clip from the audiobook after the end of the interview. So here we go. Today, I'm so excited to welcome two special guests, Christina Holbrook, who's my friend, and Walker Vreeland. And I'm going to read their bios for you so you'll know more about them. Christina is an author whose debut novel, All the Flowers of the Mountain, is a winner of the 2023 Colorado Book Award, a bronze medalist for the 2023 IPPI Award, and one of three finalists for the New Hampshire Literary Award for Fiction. Her essays and short stories have appeared in newspapers and literary journals, and her short story collection, Table for One, was released in July 2023. You can learn more at her website, ChristinaHolbrook.com. So, Christina, welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
And then along with Christina, we're talking today with Walker Vreeland, who is an award-winning producer, storyteller, and coach. He's the recipient of a 2023 Voice Arts Award for Outstanding Production of an Audiobook from the Society of Voice Arts and Sciences, and a 2023 Independent Publishers Book Award for Outstanding Audiobook of the Year. His background as an actor, voiceover artist, and radio host informs his work as a producer. He's passionate about creating original, compelling audio and coaching talent to connect. Walker is a graduate of the NYU Tisch School of the Arts and the Connecticut School of Broadcasting, and his website is walkervreelandproductions.com. So, Walker, welcome, and thanks for being here with us.
Thank you so much, Karen. It's great to be here with you.
Well, those bios don't tell nearly the story. We're all three here together to kind of tell a story of a journey that we've all been on over the last couple of years that has to do with the book, All the Flowers of the Mountain. And I've mentioned it to my audience, like 2 years ago, I mentioned that I was helping on this project, but we're here in a way to follow up on that and just tell everyone the story of how we all came together to be part of this project. So, Christina, maybe we could start with you, because the whole story starts with you writing your novel, and tell us.
Okay. Well, in 2017, I began the first draft of that would become All the Flowers of the Mountain. And I'd had this idea in my mind for probably several years, but couldn't really find a way to get started on it. And as I think I've told you before, Karen, that at the end of that year, end of 2017, I happened to pick up The Great Gatsby again. And that the format, the story, just the way that whole story kind of unfolded was, to me, just seemed like that was sort of the story that I wanted to tell, or at least that's what I thought at the time. So that kind of got me going. I was able to create an outline and kind of think about some of the dynamics going on between the characters. And I spent the next 6 months working on this first draft, which I finished in the fall of 2018. And I thought, well, I'm done. I've written a novel. Yay, I'm done. And, you know, of course, that was fairly naive. And that was really just the beginning. It took me another year to find an agent. I did many, many rewrites, from changing points of view, changing the verb tenses, all manner of rewrites. But I will say, the deeper I got into it, the more engaged I was. So it didn't seem, you know, when faced with another rewrite, I didn't necessarily think, oh, I just can't do this. I thought, like, oh, you know, I have to do this again. But then I sort of quickly got into it. So by the time the new year, 2022, came around, I was close to being finished with what would be the final draft. I had an agent. I turned it into the agent. She loved it. And I really felt like this book is going to be published at last. And then in March of 2022, I started to experience these visual disturbances and went to the doctor. No one thought it was anything too serious, probably just ocular migraines. But as it turned out, I had an MRI at the end of March 2022, and I had a brain tumor. And they pretty much rushed me to the first surgical appointment that I could get at the UC Health Anschutz, University of Colorado Hospital. And I had brain surgery on April 8th. It was determined that I had a glioblastoma. I was told that the average life expectancy was 14 to 22 months. And no one really knew, you know, even how much that data would apply to me, or even what kind of shape I would be in coming out of surgery. So, Karen, I think it was before I had surgery, actually, at the end of March, mm-hmm. that you and I were together having dinner with our husbands. And I was just sort of stunned and just so full of grief at the possibility that this project, which at this point, it's hard to even express how much it meant to me. I mean, it wasn't just the time, but I was so invested in the characters. I really feel like I know them like people. And you said to me, well, I think I could publish your book. And I thought, wait, what? You know, and I, you know, I think you said, no, I could publish your book. And I think we could get it out in 3 months. And that, you know, in the world of publishing is absolutely unheard of. I mean,
it was very daring of me to say that.
Yes, it was very daring. But I guess, you know, it was an emergency. It really felt to all of us like an emergency. And, you know, in the world of publishing, it takes years to find an agent, years to find a publisher. Even when the book has been acquired, it can take several years for the book to be released. So I just had no hope that that would ever happen. And so it was like a miracle. You know, it completely shifted things for me. And, you know, certainly going into that surgery gave me a reason to really hope that surgery was successful.
I remember that dinner so well. And yep. As your friend, I mean, we were stunned also to hear the news, completely shocked, also grieving and have, you know, not knowing what is going to happen. What can we expect? And I remember thinking, I want to do something to help. What could I do? And the first thing that popped into my head was publish the book. Cause I thought, you know what, there are so many things that you could possibly lose in this situation. What if you don't lose the book? What if the book gets published and you still have that no matter what else happens? And that seemed like that's the one thing I could do that might actually make a difference.
Well, I mean, it has made such a difference, and it's with the book. I mean, it's so much more than that. It's all of, you know, your sort of creative self coming together to try to create this world and these characters, and to think that that would never really be realized in a way was terrible. It was like, that was almost the worst thing. So, I mean, it was miraculous. And then we put together that wonderful team of editor, designer, copy editor, proofreader, and everybody jumped on board and was so motivated, I think, because of the urgency of the situation. And the book was published in July of 2022. So that it was pretty amazing.
I thought it was amazing the way the team came together, because I don't know, the people who worked on the book were just the right people with just the skills that you needed. And it's almost like you put the word out and there they were. Suddenly we had this whole team and everyone was on board. Everyone knew we were rushing and everyone cooperated. I've just never been part of a team that was so focused and working so hard together to make this happen. And
yeah, no, it was pretty wonderful. They were great. They're a great group of women. It was a female team at that point. So
of course we had our share of setbacks too, of things kind of going wrong, like the color on the cover not turning out right on the first printing, which
oh
delayed
my
the
God, that's
printing.
Right. And like rushing to get the copies to the bookstore for the book signing. And
And the order not coming through when it was supposed to, like a lot of, there were moments of stress, but in the end, everything worked. Everything happened on our timeline and came together.
Now it was wonderful. And I don't know if this is the moment to say this, but you know, it was so wonderful to have the book come out. And then you and I were together at the Colorado Book Awards about a year later. And so that was a really wonderful moment and really surprising to me, I think, because it was such a, you know, seemed like such a glamorous event. And there were some really pretty well-known writers there who had written many books. And so it was quite an honor to win in my category. So, and I was so happy that you were there too.
Oh gosh, that was such an amazing moment. And that felt like a miracle, not a miracle because the book deserved it. It's just, it's awfully hard to get your book noticed in the field out there when there's so many talented writers these days. And so we were being realistic, like, well, chances are it's not going to win. And when they announced the title of the book and your name, it was just, that was the most amazing moment.
It was.
Well, and so then Walker comes on the scene. So tell us more. I want to hear maybe Walker. Well, I don't know who wants to go first to tell
I
about
could
your
give a little
coming
lead up. I had also entered All the Flowers of the Mountain in the IPPI Awards, the Independent Publisher Book Awards, I think is what it is. And so at that ceremony, which I think people were still sort of trying to do this hybrid Zoom in person situation, but that was actually a Zoom award ceremony. And that's when I met Walker, because Walker was the winner. You'll have to describe exactly what the award was titled, but Walker won in his category. And I thought, that guy seems like he knows what he's doing. And, you know, and after that awards ceremony, I guess a few weeks later, I contacted you about maybe doing an audiobook of All the Flowers of the Mountain.
Yeah. I just want to say too, hearing you two tell the story from before I became a part of it, it just made me realize how unique this project is for so many reasons, and also how unique this conversation is, because we might not be sitting here today having this talk if it weren't for you, Karen. So thank you for stepping in, swooping in, and for everything that you did to, you know, as a leader to bring it to fruition. I don't know how often it is that you have guests on your podcasts where you are involved in their project in some way. And there are so many just kind of these miraculous synchronicities about everything, all the pieces that came together to make this what it was, bringing us to this moment. So that's just incredible. So yeah, that I remember meeting Christina at the IPPI Awards, which was remote. I had won for Outstanding Audiobook of the Year, which I did not expect I'd never expect to win anything. But also it had taken, you know, that particular audiobook project had taken a long time because I had been sick myself. during the production process. So it was a long, drawn out process. And so it meant that much more. So Christina and I connected, and it wasn't long before she told me her story, and then I told her my story. My story really begins before the last iteration of it, because I've had some health issues my whole life, really. When I was in my late teens, I was diagnosed with a degenerative liver disease, and that was something that I kind of dealt with throughout my 20s and 30s. I also dealt with a lot of mental health issues throughout my 20s. It was hospitalized briefly when I was about 27. I was living in New York, being an actor, and doing my best to kind of be a stable person in the world, kind of playing miserably. Ended up leaving the business and went into broadcasting. Then ended up hosting my own radio show in New York for about 10 years. And then I left that when I was diagnosed with cancer in 2016. One of the issues with the liver disease that I was born with is that it puts you at high risk for cancer, for bile duct cancer. And so I got that diagnosis. I was 36, 37. I had a liver resection at Sloan Kettering in New York City, which is where they took out 3/4 of the liver. And then, that was enormous. And then I kind of went back and tried to resume my life, and was back in New York City. And I had started producing because people knew I had this background in radio. They knew that I had been an actor, and people just started asking for my help. Will you help me produce my podcast? Will you help me produce this audio piece? So I started kind of freelancing a little bit at a time, kind of working my way into it. Then 2020 happened, and I had all this time on my hands. So I used that as an opportunity to create my own production company. And then in 2022, on the first of the year, I woke up in the middle of the night and I thought I was dying. I couldn't breathe. I was lightheaded. It took a lot of energy to walk up a flight of stairs. Went to the hospital, and long story short, after months and months and months of tests, I had a recurrence, it turned out. And so I was in Philadelphia at the time, and I was told by the University of Philadelphia and every other hospital in Philadelphia that the only way forward, the only possible long-term cure, would be a full liver transplant. That was it. Plan B, I'd either be approved for a full liver transplant, or that was that. I'd have maybe a couple years to live. However, no hospital in Philadelphia would do it. Because no hospital, and I was surprised by that, because I thought, well, this is a world, this, not as a city like New York or Chicago where I am now, but still medically a pretty sophisticated city. So that freaked me out that nobody in Philadelphia would do it. And then I went about the next year, as I kind of slowly lost my mind while fighting for my life, I did finally get approved for a transplant, a live donor transplant, at the University of Pittsburgh, where the liver transplant was pioneered. In fact, that's where Dr. Starzl created the liver transplant. My younger brother, Taylor, I have two younger brothers, and both of them offered to donate pieces of their liver.
Wow.
My brother, Taylor, who's 4 years younger than me, was a match. And so he selflessly, gave me the gift of life.
Wow.
And the surgery happened on November 10th, 2022. So right before, I would say 18 months ago, maybe roughly,
wow.
Not that long ago.
No.
And, you know, it's a miracle that I'm sitting here with all of you. Just it's kind of like the miracles just keep happening. As difficult as it is to go through these unbelievably groundbreaking moments where everything that you know is, you know, the rug is pulled out and you are looking your mortality in the face in the most real way you ever have. And yet, I just find it incredible that Christina and I found each other. We ended up working on this project. We both had our own, you know, serious issues that we were grappling with. And it was just the most wonderful creative process. I mean, you know, I feel so lucky when I get the chance to work with somebody who is just right on, we're on the same page when it comes to creative standards, when it comes to detail.
Walker means we're both obsessive.
Yes. We're both obsessive control freaks.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, because of my own history, I knew what this meant for her. Like, I knew how important it was for Christina to get this out. And, you know, when you were talking about the, you know, the urgency to get these characters out in the book, it's, I just think, how incredible is that? First of all, to have that, it's such a gift to have that creative process, but also how amazing is it that it's like, it was just as important for her to get those characters out and to get the story out in many ways as it was for her own self to be alive in the world, you know, and that's sometimes how I feel. And that really is, it is a relief because it feels it again, as I was saying to you before we started taping, that it's kind of, it widens your scope on everything. It just reminds you, wow, things are not as you know, Christina and I both have tests every month and everything. Sometimes it's all everything. The stability of the mind is lies in balance of what numbers on a page say. Yeah. And yet, yeah. And life can get narrower and narrower and narrower to the point where it sometimes feels like the only thing in the world that exists is you and these numbers, or you and the results of this MRI. And when you're a creative person and you have a project that you're working on and it matters profoundly to you, it things then start to open back up and you're able to I think function better, and you're allowed to, I think it helps you see the truth of the situation better. And that's, so
it's so true. And I think it's makes me feel so good to hear you say that, because that is exactly my experience of like everything. Like, I am alone in this box that's getting smaller and smaller and smaller. That's where I can go. And working, you know, that's where creativity does have that expansive quality. So, it, you know, working on a project with my characters, or, you know, working together with Walker, which is both the creative, and then we're sort of like goofing around, and sometimes in a morbid way, sometimes in just a funny way. But, you know, we both kind of get where the other person is at. And then we both have this, you know, very, like, as I was saying, sort of obsessive way of working, that, you know, moving this here and there, or this has to be redone because it needs to sound a little bit more like something. But I feel like we're both mostly on the same page with that. Or once in a while, Walker will say, no, this is okay. We don't need to redo this again.
Yeah.
And it struck me, Walker, you mentioned that you were sick when you were working on the audiobook that won the IPPI award. You were sick during that time. And Christina, same for you. You were having surgery and chemotherapy.
Yeah.
and trying to read, you know, proofread copies of your book, which was, it was a huge challenge in the midst of being sick and undergoing all this treatment to keep working on the project. And yet you did, both of you did, and both of you won awards, which is really
I know,
amazing.
That was very nice. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was a full circle moment when I was in Los Angeles in December for the Voice Arts Awards, which I didn't know anything about. You know, I knew that it had been, we'd submitted the book, and I had been submitted for one of the categories for best audiobook producer, but I didn't know. You know, I thought, well, of course I'm going to go. I have to go. You know, I'm alive, so I have to walk a red carpet. I mean, please, are you kidding me? And then, but I didn't know if it had any, what it was. I showed up there and I was driving to the Beverly Hilton, which is where they hosted the awards, which is the same place where they host the Emmys and the Golden Globes. And I'm thinking to myself, what kind of operation are these people running here? Like, what is this going to be? And then I showed up and it turned out to be like the most lavish thing. Women in gowns and men in tuxedos, and Viola Davis was there and Meryl Streep had been nominated.
Oh
and
gosh.
I was like, oh my God, this is just, you know, just one of those pinch me moments where you're like, is this, how, you know, how incredible is my life? My God, for all of the shit. I'm so grateful for these these incredible experiences that I've had, which is kind of the theme of my life. It's kind of, you know, when I was on the radio, I realized, oh, I think this is my purpose to tell these wild stories of survival as a way to connect with others, to first help myself feel less alone, but also then because really my own... primarily it's selfish. I really just want to suffer less. But then it also does help other people. It reminds us all that, you know, we're all in the same boat together.
Yeah. Oh, so very true. And it does seem, you had said, Walker, it felt like you and Chris were just like meant to come together, to work together. And it's so beautiful to hear that. I'm just so touched about it. And I wanted to mention the audiobook just came out, right? Has it been out a month or so now?
A couple of weeks. I think actually a month. Yes. Yeah. So that it's so exciting. I mean, the whole process of of working with Walker to sort of from the very beginning of, you know, what is this going to sound like? Who's going to be the voice talent? And I mean, all of the nuts and bolts, but to hear your story that you've created now in this different format where someone else is narrating it and kind of playing, you know, taking on the voice of the different characters, it's a whole different thing. And it's so fun for me to hear it and to hear these characters come alive in a different way. And, you know, Walker worked very closely with our narrator to coach her on all the different kinds of accents of the people in the book. Takes place in New York and New England. And so there's some of that. People have very distinct ways of speaking at times, but, and also Walker had the idea of adding music into certain sections. And if you remember the book, music is sort of a theme of that book, that one of the main characters plays guitar. And so these various folk songs are woven throughout the book. So Walker found a way of kind of highlighting that, I guess, or bringing that to life with different musical clips. So that was really wonderful too, to hear all that come together.
Yeah, it was fun. And I think, you know, when it comes to, you know, what makes an audiobook great, what separates the, you know, mediocre from good, good to great, whatever. I mean, so much of it is about finding the right narrator. And we just lucked out in that. I mean, it just was so, everything was perfect. It all was just so meant to be. And finding Teresa was a fluke. We were ready to cast somebody that we had done a whole casting session. I had listened to over 150 auditions.
Oh my
we
gosh.
had gotten it down to, I think,
wow.
maybe the final two or three narrators. And then Christina said, you know what? I remember this woman that I met at, I think it was maybe a conference, or I remember where you met.
She contacted me after the Colorado Book Award. And,
yeah.
You know, I hadn't thought too much of it. She sounded like a nice person, but yeah, she sort of came to mind as we were talking, like, what about Teresa?
Yeah. And she's an Emmy Award winner. She was a journalist for a long time before she became a narrator. And it was just right. It was just right. And it was kind of like another one of those moments. Wow. You
Yeah.
know, and I felt like there was this idea that came from somewhere higher than all of us and is down. And wow.
Like
There we are. Now we have our narrative.
Orchestrating everything and bringing
Yes.
all the right people together. That's how it felt when we were just publishing the book as well. And then for the book to win those awards, and certainly I'm hoping the audiobook is going to be submitted for those.
We're working on it.
That's good. That's good. Because no matter what happens, it's worth it to celebrate what you've created and to put it out there.
Thank you.
I was thinking about your question, Karen, or what I guess this started to come up in our conversation, just about how creativity can be such a helpful thing to foster if you do have some kind of life-threatening situation. I mean, it's creativity is wonderful all the way around, but you know, in my case, and maybe Walker could speak to this too, there is an aspect of a really serious illness that can be so isolating. And there is something about the creative urge that, at least I think for me, has a lot to do with connection, that I both want to kind of create my own universe in a way. So it's personal. Like I want to have that. And maybe that's connected to illness too. Your life feels so out of your hands. And when you're being creative, you are orchestrating that world. But then another aspect of it is the connection piece that you do. People read my book and I connect with, you know, sometimes they'll reach out to me with their thoughts and reactions. And that it's so wonderful to have that experience. And I mean, and it's interesting, some of the traumatic parts of the story are the things that have touched people the most, or that have caused them to reach out and say, you know, this happened to me too. And I have the sense when they say that to read this book or to hear the audiobook, to come in contact with this story, is perhaps even for them kind of a healing experience, that like someone else knows what it feels like to have this happen. Someone else out there is like me. And so that then makes me feel like, I don't know, like I have something good to do in the world, you know, so, something to offer. And that is so, when you are faced with your own mortality, it's so, so meaningful to feel like maybe I made a difference. You know, maybe this thing that I've been working on has made a difference.
It definitely has. It's what I feel like, and I don't want to speak for you, Christina, but it's what you wanted to say. It's what was and is important for you to say through the character of Kit, who was so the lead character in the book, who was so uncompromising about finding herself and finding her voice and living the life that she wanted to live, so much so that she had to trust that love would find a way, which is another theme in the book. Love will find a way. As much as I love this person, I have to do this thing that I know I need to do. And it's like, that's, I feel like what Christina is saying with this book, with this beautiful book, you know, I think, oh God, I have so many thoughts about this whole subject. I love it so much. I think it, when you are forced to look at your, the possibility that you are going to die, period, or that it might happen sooner than you want it to happen, it forces you to really ask yourself some big questions, like, what do I want to say? Like, what stories do I have left to tell? And what are those stories, and why are they important for me? You know, what's, you know, not to sound too self-important, but kind of what kind of legacy do I want my life to represent? And that's big. And I think also it is so empowering, because this whole idea of kind of taking back your power, taking back control, you know, not that we have control, but it is a way to take control in terms of what is infinite, what has the potential to be infinite beyond you, what will live on, you know. And it's what comedians do when they take their tragedy and reframe it and they claim it and own it. It's what Nora Ephron was talking about when she said everything is copy. It's all grist for the mill. And it's all an opportunity to kind of, again, like, really go deep inside yourself and ask yourself, like, who am I and what is important to me?
Yeah. I think, too, you have less inclination to try to gloss over or to make things nice. Like, it's easier to, you know, or I have felt it's been easier to the best of my ability to try to say hard things, because, you know, life can be hard. And yeah, sometimes it's easier to talk about pain or suffering or the trials that people go through, because that's life, you know, that, and those are the things in a way too, that kind of make us softer or more kind and maybe kinder towards ourselves in the end too.
Amen.
It's interesting to hear you talk about this, because, well, as the host of a podcast called End of Life University, and a former hospice doctor, like, one of the messages that came through to me is everyone in our society needs to wake up to the fact that we're all mortal. None of us have any idea how much time we have. And that if everyone could keep that awareness before them at all times, maybe they would have these experiences like you've had of seeing the bigger picture, of finding deeper meaning. But I honestly think that for many of us, we can't get to that place. We can't get to the place of recognizing our mortality until we actually have the experience of serious illness, as you two have had. It's very hard to, it's hard to conceive of that or even imagine what that would be like until you're there.
It's a nice idea that, oh, you can have this kind of self-realization. You don't have to get sick. You don't have to have a tragedy. You don't have to have a tragedy in order to reach that. But I think you kind of do. Because, I mean, as just an example, you know, some people think, oh, you have a liver transplant and that's it. You never have to think about it again. It's smooth sailing. And this year I've had kind of like a couple little bumps in the road. Nothing major, but just some little things. I've had to have a little, you know, some procedures here and there. And you know, my labs have been a little elevated more than they should be. And I was thinking the other day that, you know, if everything was just smooth sailing right now, and I could forget that it ever even happened, which was something that I used to want. Oh, I wish I could just, I had the surgery and now I can just forget that any of that ever even happened. And I can, and I don't, I have to identify with words like cancer or liver. And I can just go back to the way it was before and just identify as Walker, the writer, producer, whatever.
Yeah.
But if it was all smooth sailing right now, I would be living the same life that I was before. I would be just as crazy. I'd be just as obsessive. I'd be just as kind of miserable by small and big things. The bumps in the road are forcing me to get really real about, like, how do I live with this uncertainty? You know, how do any of us live on a day-to-day basis and keep our mind right when so much uncertainty? And now I'm really, really, that's sort of the place I'm in now. I'm really trying to make peace of mind a bigger priority than survival. How can I make my own peace of mind more important to me than my body's survival? And ironically, if I can do that, the body benefits also. So, yeah. You know what I mean? So it's a complete reframing that I would never have done if everything was just perfect.
Yeah, that's really important, I think. I mean, I'm going to remember that, how to make peace of mind more important than survival. It's so true.
Yeah,
it's hard. It's a huge challenge to put in front of yourself, but it's like the most important thing, you know. It is.
It is so hard because we're biologically engineered to survive. So it is a full-time fucking job to be. It's like it requires such vigilance.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It's
such. It is mind training. It is literally mind training.
Because literally in every moment with every decision you have to make, you face that same choice. Am I going to focus on how to find greater peace of mind and make that be my highest value and the highest good that I'm seeking here? Wow.
And it's powerful. Those things it's challenging, you know, because as like you, Walker, are talking about like the different bumps in the road. And I feel like that too at times. Like, I wish I was just having this kind of smooth path to like enlightenment. Right. It isn't like that. It's, you know, sometimes I feel like, whoa, I'm like looking out at nature, or I'm, you know, experiencing something that feels like very profound and connecting to the universe. And then other times I'm just like angry and like, you know, not nice to be around. And I think, you know, okay, now it's been like a year of this, or a year and a half, or 2 years, and I'm still cranky. Like, can't I, you know, when am I going to sort of elevate to some higher state? But so it's a challenge, but I, that peace of mind idea is, you know, in juxtaposition or whatever to the survival. It's the ongoing challenge, I guess. But when you do have those moments where you do kind of gain that peace, you realize like that's what matters. That's so important.
I am still so cranky. I mean, I couldn't get this stupid microphone to work before we started taping. I just threw it out the window of my house. But like, I so get it. It is such a these small incremental changes that happen that you don't notice them. I mean, I, you know, I'll still have hissy fits over small and big things. And yet one difference that I noticed, for instance, when you were reading my bio, Karen, I was saying to myself, who is she talking about? Who is that? That's Walker Vreeland. That's just a character I play. Like, that's just the person I pretend to be during the day. You know what I mean? So there's already there's like a little crack in the foundation, if you know what I mean.
So true. Like, who are you really at your core? What is your true self? Mm-hmm. And for me, I was going to say the whole reason that I offered to help Christina publish the book is because of my intuition that just spoke to me in the moment at the dinner table in a restaurant when I had no clue what to say and the words came out of my mouth. And that I think there is something when we can get ourselves into that present moment, we're more able to tap into the intuition that unbeknownst to us is actually going to lead us into a really great place in the middle of something that feels terrible. But we just, in the moment, we can't see where we're headed.
That's right. True. Yeah.
It's so true. It's so true. So it's kind of just like trusting.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm the right, I guess, things are arising as they're meant to arise, I yeah. suppose.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And like saying something like, we're going to publish your book without having any idea. How is that going to happen? How are we actually going to do that in 3 months? But then somehow, like, just trusting it and the pieces start to fall in place, just like it did with the audiobook as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, a month later, you were probably like, oh, shit, what have I agreed
to? Well, I mean, I, you know, it was such an amazing process. And I think, you know, particularly for fiction, we got a great narrator. I mean, there were so many parts of that I didn't understand or didn't realize the importance of. And everyone, I mean, you and Teresa were very patient too. Teresa would go back and like redo stuff that we had a small issue with. And she seemed very committed to the project too. I think she is committed to the project. So
absolutely. I can be a huge pain in the ass. And she just was so patient and took performance notes and, you know, redid things several times.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of narrators aren't as forgiving, you know, and are not as open to a creative process like that, you know, as if you're building, yeah. as if you're producing a film or a play. It was kind of, it kind of felt more like that.
I know, Walker, you sent me a clip from the audiobook that I wanted to share, but I don't want to share it on Zoom because I don't like the way Zoom records. I mean, the audio quality is bad from if I were to play it into Zoom. So I'm going to edit it in later. But I thought maybe, would you tell us, just tell the audience a little bit about this clip and why you chose it?
Christina, why don't you do that?
Yeah, I think, well, I think Walker and I were both trying to find like what is sort of the perfect the perfect clip, but this piece comes at the very beginning, and the story All the Flowers of the Mountain begins in the present day and then jumps back into the past, 1970s, 1980s, when the two main characters first meet. They're teenagers, they fall in love. And in this particular clip, we're in the present, let's say, where their characters are in middle age, and they have just missed each other in an art gallery. And Kit, the female protagonist, is just in despair that she and Michael have just missed each other. And so the gallery owner, who is her friend, and Kit is now an artist, the gallery owner comes over to her and says, like, you know, who is this guy? Why are you so upset about this? And she proceeds to kind of to give him some clues as to why this missed chance meeting was so devastating to her.
Mm.
So
I love it. And I love this, the message from the book that, you know, stays with me, that keeps inspiring me, is this idea that love finds a way even against tremendous odds, love can find a way. And that's something everyone needs to hear right now and everyone needs to believe in.
Yeah. Well, and I don't think it's true. So there.
Well, gosh, I guess our hour's up already. It's been so much fun talking with both of you about all the flowers of the mountain and how that all came together. And I'll be leaving links in the show notes so people can buy. I would say you need to buy a print version of the book and the audiobook, because as you said, it's almost like they're two different books in a way. I think it's really nice to read the print version and create your own version in your head and then listen to the audiobook and how the narrator interprets the book and how the characters come alive in a different way.
Yeah, and I think you can enjoy them in different. I mean, audiobooks are wonderful for long car rides, or I listen to audiobooks at night before I go to bed. And, you know, books may take a different place, but I think, and I, you know, a number of people have chosen this book in I print and audio format for book clubs too. So that may be something that your listeners are interested in.
And
so,
we made a book club kit that people can
we
use
did.
with tips for how to do a book club and like special fun things you could add to the book club. I'll put that in the show notes too, so people can
know
access
that. I
it.
Love that. And I actually have given that to many book clubs too. So it's very much appreciated.
Karen, I just want to add one more thing, and you can keep this in or cut it out if you, whatever you'd like to do, but I just felt compelled to tell you this, that I am in training to be a hospice volunteer.
Wow.
So when I knew your name, obviously, because I knew you had published the book and I knew that we were going to be on your podcast, but I didn't know what the podcast was. And then I realized what it was and what you do. And I thought, oh my God, that's amazing, because I didn't know that when I decided I was gonna start the training. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. You know, I knew that I wanted to give back in some way if I did make it. And I just feel called that this is the thing.
Wow.
Wow. I love that. It gives me goosebumps, like a little more synchronicity.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
I just don't want this conversation to end. It's been really fun talking with both of you and just putting the whole story together. Finally, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I'm
thank
so
you.
Grateful that you've created this space and invited us into it.
Yeah, I think, obviously, Karen, you and I have talked about this before too, but it's very sort of liberating to be able to just speak about life and death and illness and creativity and how they're all, you know, intertwined. I mean, it's there are not that many forums where you could have this kind of conversation. So
yeah, and I just want to thank you both for giving me the honor of sharing, you know, so completely and fully from your hearts and, you know, from within the uncertainty of life. And this is a moment I'll cherish, that we all got to come together. And now it's out there for the world too.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you. As promised, here is the remainder of the clip from the audiobook that I started the podcast with today.
I screwed up, Pierre, years and years ago. This is my fault. Then she drops down to sit on the floor, her back pressed against the smoky gray wall of the gallery, palms jammed up against her closed eyes, against the pain and disappointment. Who is he? A person I never expected to see again, she says finally, looking up at her old friend through tears. Pierre studies her now with curiosity. And then he leaves the gallery space for several minutes. When he returns, he holds a glass of wine in each hand. Tell me, he says. Kit accepts the glass and takes a sip, then places it on the floor next to her. Pierre sits beside the sculpture in a folding chair. It is a story, she begins, from a long time ago.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Chris Holbrook and Walter Vreeland, and even more so that you'll buy the book, All the Flowers of the Mountain, and get the audiobook as well. It's really beautifully done, so very special. And I'll just say again that I have been so inspired from working together with Christina and then hearing her story of working with Walker. I've been inspired by these two people who have remained within their creative selves, still putting out beautiful content in spite of facing serious illness. And it really inspires me. I'm not dealing with anything as serious as they are, but to think, how do we keep bringing our message to the world? How do we keep bringing our light and love to the world? And as we said a few times, the message of the book, All the Flowers of the Mountain, is that love finds a way. And that is the mantra that right now really sustains me and keeps me going. And I hope it's inspiring to you as well. If you enjoy this podcast, I hope you'll share it with others who might also benefit from listening in. And also subscribe and leave a rating and review wherever you happen to join me and listen to these episodes. And go to eoluniversity.com/support if you're able to make a small contribution to help keep this podcast on the air. So we'll see you again whenever the next episode airs. I can no longer promise it will be in 1 week. But when I do return, I'll be sharing a conversation I had with Dina Stander about the phone of the wind. And you'll really enjoy hearing that. So stay tuned. Stay with me. I will be back. Until then, remember, we're here for love, and love always finds a way. So face your fear, be ready for whatever life brings you next, and love each and every moment of your very precious life. Bye-bye.